Glassdoor wants your real name. Meta is one step closer to the Fediverse, several interesting updates from last week, and more. Welcome to Surveillance Report 172, where we are dedicated to keeping you private and secure with the latest news from the past week. I am Nathan from The New Oil.
And I'm Henry from TechLore.
If you want to support this podcast and keep us going, we still have the same tried and true methods. We have a Patreon for those of you who want to get something in return for your contributions. We offer a Q&A segment. You get to ask us questions each week, and we will put those out. For $10 a month or more, you get an extended version of the podcast that includes much more of our analysis, our opinions, things like that. If you are not interested in the perks, but you still want to support us in an easy, like, set it and forget it kind of way, we have LibrePay. And of course, for the maximum amount of privacy and security, we have Monero. So however you choose to contribute, we do appreciate you. Thank you so much for keeping this podcast going. On the note of the promo segment, real quick, I just want to say for patrons, I know we're very off schedule for the Q&A right now. That is a result of all the changes we've been doing back here and both of us being in a season right now where we're incredibly busy in our other lives. So I just want to let you guys know we're still doing the Q&A. Please bear with us. Thank you guys for your support, and hopefully things will smooth out and we'll be back on track soon. With that, let's launch into our highlight story. So the headline says Glassdoor wants to know your real name. So for those who don't know, Glassdoor is a website where historically you can leave a review of a company that you have presumably worked at, and it's supposed to be anonymous. Of course, you know, there's caveats there depending on how much you say and the size of the company. Some people could figure it out, but usually if it's a big enough company and you leave enough details vague, you can be anonymous and you can leave feedback. So people who might maybe have gotten a job offer or might be considering that company, they can look at it and see, you know, oh, this company has terrible internal communication. You know, you're traveling 75% of the time, whatever the case may be. Quoting the article, Glassdoor has changed their signup process to ask people to disclose their full name, job title, and employer. Historically, it had required an email address, but not names. In tests by Wired, who is the one that published this article, returning users who didn't previously provide a full name are prompted to enter one by an impossible to dismiss pop-up. Reviews of employers posted to Glassdoor remain anonymous, and people can post in its new discussion channel with only their work titles or employer visible. But the company's policy of collecting and verifying real names has triggered concern among some users and privacy experts. Alarm about those changes recently spread on social media, where several people described logging into an old account and allegedly finding their names had already been added without their consent. Wired reviewed emails in which one user was told by a Glassdoor support representative that they would not be able to remove their name and would have to delete their account if they wanted it gone. Just to add on to that, this is in the article, but the way that they seem to have gotten people's real names is in 2021, they acquired a service called Fishbowl Social. I guess that's supposed to be sort of a LinkedIn competitor. So the idea was you sign up with this service. I've never used it, but based on the article, it sounded kind of like a mix between LinkedIn and Slack. And because Glassdoor acquired them, I don't know how they did it, but it seems that they somehow cross-referenced data with Fishbowl, and that's how they figured out, oh, this is you, let's just add your name to your account. My analysis of this is, I don't think this is terrible yet, objectively speaking, because you can still remain anonymous and choose not to make your name public. However, being semi-fluent in privacy, I know that the result of stuff like this is that it has a chilling effect on free speech. And there's absolutely nothing to stop Glassdoor from in the future being like, oh, by the way, we're going to add names, or we're going to even initials, you know, like Nate B. Okay, but how many Nate B's are at Microsoft? Okay, Microsoft's a bad example, but you know, for most companies, like how many people are there with that name? I understand Glassdoor probably has an interest in making sure that you did actually work for the company, which, I mean, even if you work for the company, you could still have a vendetta. I don't know, but maybe that was a big problem. But either way, it definitely, I think, will chill free speech and has the potential to be extremely bad down the road.
Yeah, I would just add, if you're looking for information regarding this, there's always lots of other websites you can utilize for this type of thing. You don't have to use Glassdoor. And this is actually probably an area where something like even Reddit might not be the worst place in the world. If you want to post an experience or something on Reddit. Well, now we're going to go into data breaches. Unfortunately, there aren't too many this week. And we're going to start with AT&T, which leaked data of 70 million people. but not from its systems, apparently. It includes things about AT&T customers, including their names, addresses, mobile phone numbers, date of birth, social security numbers, and other internal information. If you were a AT&T customer before and through 2021, it's safe to assume that your data was exposed and can be used in targeted attacks. But again, AT&T hasn't really said how this happened, and they didn't really reply to see if it was a third-party service or vendor.
Tech giant Fujitsu says it was hacked and warns of a data breach. Quoting, well, them, quoting the article, "We confirmed the presence of malware on multiple work computers at our company and discovered that files containing personal information and customer information could be illegally taken out," unquote. They said that they disconnected the affected systems from their network and investigated how the network was compromised and whether information had been leaked. They have not said what kind of information may have been stolen or who it pertains to, such as employees, customers, or citizens.
Pokemon resets some users' passwords after hacking attempts. So the alert is gone as of Tuesday, but a spokesperson for the company said there was no breach, and it's just a series of hacking attempts against some users. They said that 0.1% of the accounts targeted by the hackers were actually compromised. The description of the Pokemon account breaches sounds like credential stuffing, and the Pokemon company does not allow its users to enable 2FA on their accounts.
And our last data breach, misconfigured Firebase instances leaked 19 million plain text passwords. For those who don't know, Firebase is a Google platform for hosting databases, cloud computing, and app development. The researchers scanned more than 5 million domains and found 916 websites from organizations that had either no security rules enabled or had them set up incorrectly. More than 125 million sensitive user records were found, including emails, names, passwords, in plain text apparently, phone numbers, and billing information with bank details. After analyzing the data from the samples, the researchers tried to warn all of the impacted companies of improperly secured instances. They sent 842 emails over 13 days. Although just 1% of the site owners replied, a quarter of the notified administrators fixed the misconfigurations in their platforms.
And now we're going to go into the company news, and we're going to start with Meta, aka Facebook, who just showed off Threads Fediverse integration for the very first time. So Threads is kind of their new Twitter alternative, and the Fediverse is what we see, I guess, with Mastodon in terms of how anyone can host it, and it all communicates with one another. So you can spin up your own Mastodon server and then communicate with somebody else's Mastodon server. And essentially something that people have been looking forward to, or not looking forward to, depending on who you ask, is that Threads is going to essentially hook into the Fediverse and be able to integrate with Mastodon users. So there's been an update to this. There was a demo done of how users will eventually be able to connect their accounts and posts to the Fediverse. The integration will let users share their posts across different platforms through Threads, letting them reach multiple audiences at once. Meta is just one of many platforms aiming to join the Fediverse, a group of decentralized social networks aiming to become interoperable with one another. Meta notes that users will need to have a public profile to toggle on the feature, and in the current alpha test, you can't view replies to their posts and can only see the likes they receive. They say Meta's working super hard on changing that, though. Meta warns that Threads can't guarantee that a post gets deleted on other linked platforms if a user decides to delete it on Threads. In other words, your post may still be visible on, like, a linked Mastodon server, even if you decide to delete it with Threads.
Okay, this next story is a quick one and just kind of a FYI. Microsoft is deprecating their 1024-bit RSA keys in Windows. Anything shorter than 2048 will soon be deprecated in the Windows TLS to provide increased security. 1024-bit RSA keys have approximately 80 bits of strength, while 2048 has approximately 112 bits, making the latter 4 billion times longer to factor. Experts in the field consider 2048 safe until at least 2030. RSA keys are used in Windows for several purposes, including server authentication, data encryption, and ensuring the integrity of communications. While Microsoft has not specified precisely when the deprecation will begin, it will likely involve a formal announcement followed by a grace period, as we usually see with things like deprecating Windows and stuff like that. So,
super quick update, and this is an update to last week. We talked about how many car companies are sharing data with things like LexisNexis and data brokers, and how someone's insurance actually went up as a result of it. In fact, not just one person, but multiple people. In fact, there's probably a lot of people we don't know about their insurance going up as a result of this. So I would go back and watch last week's episode if you want to learn more about that. The quick update to this is General Motors has quit sharing driving behavior with data brokers, I assume as a result of all this backlash.
With that, we'll move into research. We don't have a lot of research stories, but the ones we have are interesting and a little long. So bear with us. Our first story says unpatchable vulnerability in Apple chip leaks secret encryption keys. I'm going to go ahead and quote the article here, so bear with me. The flaw, a side channel allowing end-to-end key extractions when Apple chips run implementations of widely used cryptographic protocols, can't be patched directly because it stems from the microarchitectural design of the silicon itself. Instead, it can only be mitigated by building defenses into third-party cryptographic software that could drastically degrade M-series performance when executing cryptographic operations, particularly on earlier M1 and M2 chips. The vulnerability can be exploited when the targeted cryptographic operation and the malicious application with normal user system privileges run on the same CPU cluster. For the record, this is one of those articles that there are crap tons of technical details in the article. So if you are a researcher or just interested in that stuff, definitely check that out. I'm trying to condense the SparkNotes version, as always. So just wanted to throw that out there. Security experts have long known that classical prefetchers open a side channel that malicious processes can probe to obtain secret key material from cryptographic operations. The breakthrough of the new research is that it exposes a previously overlooked behavior of DMPs in Apple silicon. Sometimes they confuse memory content, such as key material, with the pointer value that is used to load other data. As a result, the DMP often reads the data and attempts to treat it as an address to perform memory access. The attack, which researchers have named GoFetch, one word, GoFetch, uses an application that doesn't require root access, only the same privileges needed by most third-party applications installed on a Mac system. The attack works against both classical encryption algorithms and a newer generation of encryption that has been hardened to withstand anticipated attacks from quantum computers. The GoFetch app requires less than an hour to extract a 2048-bit RSA key, a little over 2 hours to extract a 2048-bit Diffie-Hellman key, and it takes 54 minutes to extract the material required to assemble a Kyber 512 key and 10 hours for a Dilithium 2 key, not counting offline time needed to process the data. And those last two are post-quantum protocols, I believe. The GoFetch app connects to the targeted app and feeds it input that it signs or decrypts. As it's doing so, it extracts the app secret key that it uses to perform these operations. The mechanism means the targeted app need not perform any cryptographic operations on its own during the collection period. Like other microarchitectural CPU side channels, the one that makes GoFetch possible can't be patched in the silicon. This means that in addition to constant time programming, developers will have to employ other defenses, almost all of which come with significant performance penalties. Readers should remember that whatever penalties result will only be felt when affected software is performing specific cryptographic operations. For browsers and many other types of apps, the performance costs may not be noticeable. End users who are concerned should check for GoFetch mitigation updates that become available for macOS software that implements any of the four encryption protocols known to be vulnerable. Out of an abundance of caution, it's probably also wise to assume, at least for now, that other cryptographic protocols are likely also susceptible.
All right, and now to more weird, bizarre side channel nonsense that are fun, because why not? A new acoustic attack determines keystrokes from typing patterns. So they've demonstrated a new acoustic side channel attack on keyboards that can deduce user input based on their typing patterns, even in poor conditions, like when you have noise. It does have an average success rate of 43%, which seems fairly low, but it does not require controlled recording conditions or a specific typing platform, which makes it applicable in real attacks, and depending on some target-specific parameters, it can produce enough reliable data to decipher the overall target input with some post-capture analysis. In terms of methods of implementing this attack, they do talk about through malware, malicious websites or browser extensions, compromised apps, cross-site scripting, or compromised USB keyboards. It is worth mentioning this requires samples, and the recorded typing sessions of the same target took place on different keyboard models, and the recordings were taken using a low-quality mic, or the target is free to use any typing style. The method has limitations that sometimes make the attack ineffective, like when people who rarely use a keyboard and haven't developed a consistent typing pattern, or professional typists who type very fast may be difficult to profile. The researchers also noted that the amplitude of the produced waveform is less accentuated when using silent keyboards, which can hamper the training effectiveness for the prediction model and lower the keystroke detection rates.
Pwn to Own Vancouver has ended. Hackers have earned over $1 million for 29 zero days. and some bug collisions. This is just kind of giving you guys an overview. There's more details in the article. Competitors successfully gained code execution and escalated privileges on fully patched systems after hacking Windows 11, Ubuntu Desktop, VMware Workstation, Oracle VirtualBox. They say three web browsers, but I'm pretty sure they actually got four. Safari, Chrome, and I'll talk about Firefox in a minute. Safari, Chrome, Edge, and I'll talk about Firefox in a minute. And a Tesla Model 3. Vendors have 90 days to release fixes before the vulnerabilities are publicly disclosed. On the second day, the person who won also exploited an out-of-bounds write zero-day vulnerability to gain RCE and escape Firefox's sandbox using an exposed dangerous function weakness. So that's, I don't know why that wasn't included, but whatever. Again, there's way more in the article about Pwn2Own and some of the different things that were found, but those are just kind of the highlights.
Hackers have found a way to open any of 3 million hotel key card locks in seconds. So security researchers are revealing a hotel key card hacking technique that they call UnsafeLock. The technique is a collection of security vulnerabilities that would allow a hacker to almost instantly open several models of this SafeLock brand of RFID-based key card locks sold by the Swiss lock maker Dormakaba. So they are installed in 3 million doors worldwide inside 13,000 properties in 131 countries. So pretty much the way they do this is they have to get a key card by either booking a room someplace or taking the key card out of a box of used ones. Then they read a certain code from that card with a RFID read-write device, and then they write two key cards of their own. And when they tap those two cards on a lock, the first rewrites a certain piece of the lock's data, and the second opens it so they can get into any of the doors. They're aware of the flaws and are looking to replace and fix the vulnerable locks. And as of this month, only 36% of installed safe locks have been updated. And given that the locks aren't connected to the internet and some older locks will still need a hardware upgrade, they say the full fix will still likely take 2 months longer to roll out, at the very least. They say some older installations may take years. The researchers say there's not much to do other than to avoid leaving valuables in the room. And of course, when you're inside, you can bolt the chain on the door. They've warned that the deadbolt on the room is also controlled by the key card lock, so it doesn't provide an extra safeguard, so you have to use the deadbolt. Sorry, you have to bolt the chain. Not the deadbolt. So even without a perfect or fully implemented fix, they agree it's better for hotel guests to know the risks than to have a false sense of security.
I don't know why I didn't put it in the notes, but actually there is an app. They say that if you're concerned, you can download the app and check your lock. It only works on this brand of lock, but they also mention how to potentially identify them. If you do have that lock and it hasn't been updated, then that's when it's like, yeah, there's not much you can do. We'll move into politics. We have one story this week. I'm sure there's plenty of stuff I missed, but this was the only one I saw. This comes from the EFF, and they are talking about California's new mobile driver's license. So this article is actually like a call to action for politicians, but I thought the information was really interesting. Quoting the article, the California DMV wallet app came out in app stores last year as a pilot, offering the ability to store and display your mobile driver's license or MDL on your smartphone without needing to carry and present a traditional physical document. Several features in this app replicate how we currently present the physical document with key information about our identity, like address, age, birthday, driver class, etc. However, other features in the app provide new ways to present the data on your license. Right now, we only take out our license occasionally throughout the week. However, with the app's QR code and add-on features, the incentive for frequency may grow. This concerns us, given the risk of age verification laws that burden everyone's access to the internet and the lack of comprehensive consumer data privacy laws that keep businesses from harvesting and selling identifying information and sensitive personal information. For now, you can use the California DMV wallet app with TSA in airports and with select stores that have opted into an age verification feature called TrueAge. That feature generates a separate QR code for age verification on age-restricted items such as alcohol and tobacco. This is not simply a one-to-one exchange of going from a physical document to an MDL. Rather, this presents a wider scope of possible usage of MDLs that needs expanded protections for those who use them. While California is not the first state to do this app, it will be used as an example to explain the current landscape. California decided to contract with a third-party vendor to build the app rather than using the existing Google or Apple wallets. There are concerns about large companies being contracted by the state to deliver MDLs to the public, such as their controlling of public image of digital identity and device compatibility. Scope is also a concern. The state contracted with Spruce ID to build this app, and the company states that its purpose is to empower, quote, organizations to manage the entire lifecycle of digital credentials, such as MDLs, software audit statements, professional certifications, and more. And in the add-on section, TrueAge's age verification QR code is available. Just a quick pause there. In other words, like, what is the scope of these companies? Are they limited to just building this app? Are they allowed to use this data for other things? Valid concerns, of course. And then going back to the article, another issue is selective disclosure, meaning the technical ability for the identity credential holder to choose which information to disclose to a person or entity asking for information from their credential. This is a long-time promise from enthusiasts of digital identity. The most used example is verification that the credential holder is over 21 without showing anything else, such as name or address. But the California DMV wallet app has lack of options for selective disclosure.
All right, and now we're going to move over into the FOSS category, open source. So ProtonPass is Proton's new password manager, which now supports passkeys on all devices and plans. And this applies to everybody, allowing you to manage and use passkeys across all devices seamlessly. And the support is available on all plans. So really awesome stuff.
Our other FOSS story is GNOME 46 Kathmandu has been released. And here's what's new. Okay. This article is super dense in the best way. So I'm cutting out so much. There has been so many changes to GNOME 46. We're just going to focus on stuff that's relevant to privacy and security. So it includes major new features like headless remote desktop support that lets you connect to your GNOME system remotely without there being an existing session. There's a new system panel that incorporates secure shell settings. The settings app also comes with a new apps panel that incorporates a new privacy and security panel that replaces the previous privacy panel. Online accounts now offers web-based authentication, which is more secure, and also I believe they said is optional or is like not part of the onboarding. GNOME Software App Manager has been updated to support verified Flatpak apps as well as user installation of local .flatpak files. It will now let you adjust how apps with read-write pipewire access are presented and updates the safety window to show if Flatpak apps are using the device equals input permission, which is mostly used for game controllers, but still. Again, that's just the privacy and security stuff. Like every sentence of this article was like, here's a new feature, here's a new feature, here's a new feature. And as always, the Linux Experiment, I think just earlier this week, released a whole freaking video. I think it was like 20 minutes long. I can't remember, but yeah, if you want to know more about this, check the news, check the video. There's a lot going on in this one. It's pretty cool.
And now we're going to finish off with the misfits. And we only have one story this week, and it's an update to last week. So last week, we talked about how one of the data removal services from people searching websites called OneRep, the CEO actually used to run people searching networks themselves. And how this was a big thing. Well, Mozilla now has dropped that company because Mozilla actually utilized OneRep for its own service. And so Mozilla has dropped the company and they've actually made some public announcements about this. So the OneRep, which is the organization, the CEO who had involvement with people searching websites, the CEO came forward and pretty much said that he founded it in 2015, the same year when he launched OneRep. And he said that there was no information sharing between the two of them. And he actually said that he gets it and that his affiliation with a people searching business may look odd, but in truth, if he hadn't had taken that initial path with a deep dive into how they worked in the first place, OneRep wouldn't have the best tech and team in the space. But, and he also says, he appreciates that we did not make this more clear in the past, and they're aiming to do better in the future. Similarly, Mozilla, well, not similarly, but on the other hand, Mozilla has come forward and said they will be moving away from OneRep as a service provider because even though there was never customer data at risk, the outside financial interests and activities of OneRep CEO do not align with their values. So they're working on a plan to transition users to something else, and we don't know what that is yet.
And that's all we've got for this week. So Glassdoor wants your real name. Beware of that. Meta is one step closer to the Fediverse. So if you are not a fan of that, I respect that. Make sure you find an instance that has chosen to defederate with them. If you don't care, then carry on as normal. And again, several important updates from a variety of stories last week. So that is why you should be subscribed, because we cover updates. We let you know when things change. as long as we know that they have changed. A reminder that this podcast is free, but it does take a considerable amount of time from us to record, to edit, to collect the stories, take the notes. So if you get value out of this podcast and you have the means to do so, please support us financially. We have a Patreon. For $5 a month, you can be part of the Q&A, which again, things are a little wonky right now because of the transition, but that should be settling down soon. We're working on that. For $10 a month or more, you still get all of our deeper analysis, our thoughts and opinions. I definitely went on a rant about Mozilla in that last story that will probably stay in. If you don't care about the perks, but you just want an easy way to support us, there is LibrePay. It is much more privacy respecting in terms of the actual website itself. And of course, we still have Monero, which is the most private and anonymous way to support us. And we don't see anything about you, but we do see the support and we thank you all. And just as a reminder, if you are not able to financially support us, I totally understand. Times are tough. We still appreciate comments, likes, sharing the podcast around, subscribing, all that fun stuff. So on that note, thank you for listening. Please subscribe if you have not, because again, we do issue updates. Everything you do, the subscribing, the rating, the commenting, that helps boost us in the algorithm, helps us spread the message of privacy. We're trying to reach as many people as possible, and we're glad that you guys are so passionate about this stuff and you're in that fight with us. So thank you guys again, and we will be back next week with a fresh round of stories.